Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. And Jim, it was about a week ago that we saw the latest report from the president's own administration that the environmental impact of constructing the Keystone XL pipeline would be negligible. And so everyone's thinking, okay, finally, the green light. Well, of course, the administration, which has had 5 years to study this, needs to study it further, according to Jay Carney. But apparently the wall of defense of the president's procrastination or possible opposition to this, which is probably the case, is starting to crumble. We already had a Stephen Chu, the former energy secretary, not only saying that the pipeline idea is probably a good idea, but he says opposition to it is absolutely political. Now Ken Salazar, the former interior secretary, is saying as a result of this new report that he thinks he can put the green light on this. There's even new polls out there suggesting a small majority of Democrats believe this is a good idea. So the good news is that the plausibility of denying this seems to be getting weaker and weaker.
Yeah, it does feel like the dominoes are falling. It starts with the State Department coming out with its report. You mentioned Chu, former Interior Secretary Ken Salazar, and the Washington Post editorial board really rips into the environmentalists, saying that no matter what they claim to care about, this is the wrong fight for them to have. The impact on greenhouse emissions is going to be negligible, et cetera, et cetera. One of the things kind of jumps out about this is that when these studies come out showing that, well, look, the oil is going to come out of Canada anyway. So the question is, do they run it across Canada by rail to take it off their west coast and ship it off to China? Or do they want to build a pipeline down here? You can't stop people from using oil. And that ultimately is what the environmentalist movement really wants to see someday. And it's kind of this just fantastical thinking that you could go from our current society that uses, you know, oil in all kinds of different ways and uses it to ship every product. And the vast majority of people either have cars or ride in cars or ride on buses or ride on trucks. And if they're not, even if they walk everywhere, they're still buying stuff off store shelves. It gets to the stores by gas. So it really is about posing. It really is just about saying, look, I care more than you do. We have to have our policies enacted because we care more about these, you know, little animals and stuff like that. Whether or not the administration reaches a decision on this, the interesting thing is that they've achieved what their goal, which is to not build this without ever coming out and saying, look, we're not building this because we just don't think there should be pipelines in America. They realize how ridiculous that would sound. They realize how unpopular that would be. So what they're doing is they're just kind of perpetually kicking the can down the road. This has now been 5 years that this project has been on the drawing board, waiting for the government to approve it. And, you know, perpetual delays is another way of saying no. And what kind of says something about the administration is that how cowardly they are, that they're afraid of actually declaring, no, we don't think it should be built. So they'll do this. The fact that, you know, Salazar and Chu and these guys makes it tougher with each passing time. And it does look like eventually they're either going to have to, you know, rip the Band-Aid off and say, well, we just don't think there should be pipelines at all. Or they'll eventually relent and say yes. And, you know, the environmentalists will be up in arms and furious over their, you know, favorite president for selling them out.
Jim, let me put on my cynical cap since we are in an election year. Do you think what we're seeing in terms of the growing opposition from the left on this issue is genuine, or do you think it's, regardless of what the administration does, vulnerable Democrats can either say, look, I'm fighting for this thing, I'm fighting the president of my own party for this, or they can claim that they helped convince him to change his mind and allow it to happen if it does happen?
That's a good question. I think, you know, one of the things that came out in this the Post editorial was that in the grand scheme of environmental concerns, it's actually fairly small potatoes, right? I mean, compared to global greenhouse emissions or even compared to things that are a little bit more tangible for people, open spaces initiatives or cute, cuddly endangered species, don't build that pipeline in a part of the country that are, you know, relatively sparsely populated states, relatively sparsely populated areas. You'd think that West Virginia could be a better rallying cry for the environmental movement than don't build this pipeline. So it really is kind of a sign of the environmental movement going down into a rabbit hole. And perhaps, you know, a lot of Democrats are realizing that they've followed their allies into a policy blind alley in which they basically have found themselves opposing something that not only creates jobs, but that really has a fairly negligible impact on the environment as a whole.
All right, moving on to martini number two now, and it is the first Friday in a new month, and that means we have a new jobs report from the previous month. Once again, below expectations, although the numbers are a little bit better than last month. 113,000 net jobs created in January. The overall unemployment rate ticks down a little bit to 6.6%. Some are suggesting that we're also seeing a growth of the number of people in the labor market. But, Jim, I'm not sure those two numbers put together bear out that argument, because I think you need more jobs than that to see a reduction in the unemployment rate if people are actually entering the labor force. But either way, these aren't the numbers we need to see for sustained quality economic growth and to get these long-term unemployed folks a job.
What was surprising about today's numbers was how surprised other people were, because they're not disastrous compared to, say, end of 2008, beginning of 2009, but they're pretty lousy. Around the level of, pretty minimal job growth month to month that we're used to getting. A lot of people say, well, wait, maybe it was the weather, and people, exaggerate. But it really, even if you think the numbers are skewed a little bit because of weather, and there are people who thought last months were so disappointing that they just had to be wrong, the overall picture is not that different from what you would see outside your door, which is we're not seeing, enormous construction going on. We're not seeing businesses opening. We're not seeing, signs saying we're hiring. The economy is pretty bad, and one of the things that's kind of striking about it is that for like around last year when we were like maybe on a good month, 200,000 jobs created, the slightest bit of marginally good news was enough to persuade a lot of people in Washington, okay, economy's fixed. It's doing fine. We're back on the right course. And clearly it isn't. And this is showing it. It'd be interesting. I mean, people had kind of figured that Obamacare would be front and center in the midterm elections. You got to wonder whether the economy and job creation may return as, if not issue one, then issue 1A in the election.
All right, on to the crazy martini now, and it's already day one of the Sochi Olympics. We'll see the official opening ceremonies tonight. Last night, a few of the early events were broadcast on NBC, but Bob Costas was also setting the stage, helping people understand what's going on in the host country of Russia. And so he put together a short piece on the current and recent activities of one Vladimir Putin. Here's how that went.
Just in the past year, Putin brokered a deal to allow Syria to avoid a U.S. military strike by giving up its chemical weapons and helped bring Iran to the negotiating table over its nuclear intentions. And he has repeatedly showcased his confidence to take on the West, particularly the United States, offering asylum to National Security Agency leaker Edward Snowden, enticing Ukraine to back out of a deal to join the European Union, and passing laws viewed as repressive to members of the gay community and their supporters.
Basically, they're making him out to be a peacemaker with the likes of Syria and Iran, even though he helped build Iran's nuclear program and is arming Bashar Assad. And the glossing over of what's happening in the Ukraine would be laughable if it wasn't so tragic. So not exactly detailed reporting there.
Yeah, persuading is a really interesting word choice there, considering how some would say strong-arming, pressuring, or intimidating the internal politics of Ukraine. That actually wasn't as terrible as I suppose it could be. And it's been a really kind of a fascinating thing to watch in the lead up to these games. At this point, we're all hoping there's not some terrible terror attack. Even without a terrible terror attack, this is still going to be remembered as a messy games. Nothing is prepared. It's oppressive. We're glorifying Putin's regime. Lots of reasons to not like it. And NBC spent $1 billion to have the rights to the games. So on the one hand, they have an enormous amount of money on stake of this being an exciting games is something that gets really high ratings so that everybody watches the TV and watches the commercials and NBC can make a lot of money. So if you're NBC, you have this incentive to say, well, things are okay. Things are good. Forget about all the problems over there. Let's watch the excitement of the figure skaters and the hockey team and all that stuff. And to their credit, NBC had been pretty good about covering a lot of this stuff. I think they also realized that by having a lot of people on the ground, they own the story of all the problems on the ground in Sochi. And so they have seen a decent amount of coverage on that. On the other hand, everybody in Sochi knows that, your ability to get around, your ability to get, broadcasting, everything is dependent upon the Russian government doing their jobs. And so the question will be, is the news coverage going to be afraid of antagonizing the Russian government? And that report and that, rather positive spin on Putin was one of the first signs that NBC might be wavering a bit and kind of pulling its punches in its coverage of the Russian regime over there. I'd also note, I had not had a good chance to see it, but Greg, did you see the pink eye that Costas has last night?
I did not.
He has it, and apparently somebody else at NBC News, might have been Meredith Vieira or somebody, also has pink eye. That's what we're calling it. Over there, they just call it Russian red eye in the early stages.
They must have touched the water to the face. We just talked about
exactly.
This a couple
yeah,
days ago.
You put the yellow water in the eye, your eye turns red. So.
Well, that's off to a fabulous start.
Yeah. Heck of a games, Greg. Heck of a games. Can't wait, you know.
Well, you speculated in the Jolt, and I saw the rumors yesterday also that Vladimir Putin's girlfriend or mistress, whoever you want to call her, who was a medalist in rhythmic gymnastics about a decade ago, could be lighting the torch. I'd be a little bit disappointed with that. I'm expecting him to rappel bare-chested out of some sort of plane to light it on the fly and swing back up or something.
You know, I was hoping they would salute one of the all-time great athletes from Russia, Ivan Drago, who we all remember from the Rocky movies. You know, great boxer from those days.
He lost, though. There's no way Putin's going to put a loser up there to light the torch.
Good point. Good point. He's probably off in some Siberian work camp right now.
All right, Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Have a great weekend, everyone, and we'll see you next week for the 3 Martini Lunch.